Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
evening.
Well, we're here again, y'all. And all I got to say is it was a good game, wasn't it? Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Soul Free Radio Interrupt. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, single DJ Honeycomb. And as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio on the Raw, sponsored by the Black Athlete Sports Network. Roland Rogers, our CEO in loving memory. And if you want to know the who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how us in the world of sports, holla, www.basnnewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, which shall be checking in briefly. As I say a special prayer for my brother Pat Freeman, whose people in Buffalo had to endure that bullshit with the white boy saying, "Oh, I didn't really mean to do it." So I tried to get his ass. It's a little too late. But I believe me. It's like Chris Rock says, but I understand it. Anyway, we're at the point where we're going to break down what we saw and didn't see from the Super Bowl. But before I do that, I want to call upon my man, Doug Williams. Now, Doug has been at the forefront of much of this because, of course, they asked him the dumb question of how long have you been a black quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. But there's an element of Doug that we never said anything about that I think we should tap. And that's the fact that Doug Williams was pissed. Now, we all know how Super Bowl 22 started. I got my man Gary Norris Gray in the background. And John Elway hits Ricky Mateel with a bomb and it's 7-0 right off the bat. It's like, oh, shit, here we go. They think the rally's on. Washington sputters and, of course, Doug falls and almost fumbles. And, you know, he hit the turf. And myself, Gary, Tony, Fred, and everybody else in the black world said, "Get the fuck up!" And Doug got up. Now, what we don't say is how Doug reacted once he got up. You know, I told you a couple of weeks ago about my friend Mario Balotelli, the striker who was born in Ghana, was adopted by an Italian mom, and he was so talented. He played on the national team as a teenager. But, of course, because he was black, and I mean blue-black, he was subject to the scorn of everybody and all this horse shit, nigga this and nigga that. And I don't know if it's even worse than Italian. But you know what I mean. So Balotelli makes his mark, and he's pissed. And that anger just carries on. And I understand. It's like you're not going to take by being called names but for so long, or people are going to impugn your character but for so long. It's like enough is enough. I got to believe Doug was pissed. And when Doug got back up and got back in the huddle, he said, "Fuck this." And he looked at Ricky Sanders and he said, "Ricky, 83Z post corner." And Ricky just looked and nodded. Like, yeah, I know I can take him. And Lilly, who was the safety for Denver, he was no match for him. As soon as Sanders got open, Doug fired that bad boy. And next thing you know, the route was really on. Of course, he hit Sanders again. And then Gary Clark and Clint Didier and the running back cut loose for almost 200 yards. But the whole point, Gary, was Duggan had enough. He said, I'm tired of hearing this shit. He became Dolomite and Cleats. And what we really don't say is the victory of Washington over Denver was one of the biggest ass whippings in the Super Bowl history. And good evening.
Good evening. I want people to remember this. All week long, we're talking about Mr. Seven, Mr. Elway. All week long, it was Elway this, Elway that, Elway, Elway, Elway. When wheels went down, I'll never forget this, Michael. I looked at my dad looked at me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He said, get on, David, get on.
That's right. I know you said it. I said it. I was like, oh, my God. No, get your ass up.
And Michael, what? How you feel a aura or feel a spirit or feel, you know, have you ever done that?
Yep.
Well, I felt that spirit that night.
I know what you mean.
And I do everything's gonna be all right because I said, oh, I feel it coming.
No shit. You know, we got Tony McClain and Radio Reggie with us, and fellas, I know y'all told Doug to get up. I felt you get up. What happened when you hollered get up?
Oh, but even my brother was saying, get the hell up.
Hey, my late mother was saying, Lord, let the boy get up. Don't let him get hurt. Lord, please let him get up. And Professor Tony Carr, mom was saying, Lord, he hurt. Lord, he hurt. Is anybody going to help him up? I said, yeah, the spirit going to help him up, aren't you?
It's funny, you know, I was lucky enough to interview him. And years ago, he came to our high school, and my old high school, mm-hmm. and spoke. And one of the things he said there was never a time when he would go through the airport or whatever, or he would have some old woman tell him, when you went down, I was praying on God and rosary beads and all that. That was one of those, you know, where, you know, for us as Black folks, that was one of those where were you the day of, you know, of that Super Bowl.
He was.
I'm watching. I admit, when they announced his name, I cried because I thought I would never, you know, to me, for a lot of us, that was our Jackie Robinson moment.
Very gracious when he came out west and Grambling played Portland State, and he gave me a few extra minutes in the locker room, and we talked briefly about that. But we never for a minute equated his name with being pissed, you know. But we know once he started throwing those bombs, and Ricky caught one, and I think Ricky caught another, and then Smith caught one, and then Gary Clark caught one, and Clint Didier caught one.
Yep.
It was like, what the fuck? And I know Elway was like, what the fuck? Well, you know what? It was inevitable, because Washington had the better team. They had the Hawks, who had skill on top of their reputation. They actually could play.
They had the better coach, too.
Yeah, they were big across the line, both lines. And for all the noise they wanted, John Elway couldn't help being the white guy.
Michael, there's a video. I wish I could find it. There's a video of Williams on the sidelines after he got injured. And they're trying to tell him, you better stay here. Williams got up and said, this is my damn team. This is my team.
That's right.
I wish I could find a video.
Yeah,
because Jay Strader was screwed it up, but he raised his ass.
Old badass line stepped on a single flying monkey's feet. He was dolomite in cleats. And they went out there and whooped Denver's ass. I mean, and that wasn't but ass whooping.
Yeah, but the thing that really got to everybody was Alan Campanis and his racist statement. And let's not forget the wonderful question asked to Doug. So, Doug, how long you been a black quarterback? I mean, for somebody to ask such an ignorant-ass question, it was beyond pulling out straws. It was a racist, ignorant time. And the thing that I never forgot about that game was that how many black folks were wearing Burgundy and Gold, because I don't use the R word, was in that stadium. Here they were in the Midwest, and was more Burgundy and Gold fans out there than Denver fans.
And a lot of black.
You got a lot of people who still root for Washington strictly because of that.
I have a cousin who is Native American who wears all that stuff. And I said, what are you crazy?
Mm-hmm. No, Jimmy, here's my question. Here's my question to the panel. Help a brother out. Now, we've seen the outstanding play of both quarterbacks this past week.
Yes.
But we have to ask the question, how in the ham sandwich, Michael, T-Mac, and the illustrious Gary, can two offensive coordinators, defense coordinators from the losing team, get head fucking coaching jobs? And they have to damn near tell every enemy, don't sign a contract. You got to make a lateral move. ESPN, the Mad Dog, I could just slap his ass. I mean, I just fuck him.
Andy Reid basically said he's coming back. So much for all of that. You know, I mean, basically, or for lack of a better word, he's basically the new Sherm Lewis.
Yes.
Sherm Lewis now.
I think it's about that Sherm Lewis.
Sherm was already, Sherm was already in his, 60s or what have you.
Yeah.
So they used the whole age thing on him. But see, now, I mean, Bieniemy is still, I don't even think he's 50. Maybe right at 50. I mean, he's not, but it's going to be one of those things where if he keeps getting bypassed, then they're going to use that whole, the game's past him. Because see, the Byron, look at what happened with Byron Leftwich, Leftwich got, won, a Super Bowl as the offensive coordinator. For whatever reason, it didn't work out with the Jaguars. And now, he basically was made the scapegoat for the Buccaneers offense this year. Even though he was playing with freaking Methuselah back there.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, you think, but I believe the Brian Flores Miami Dolphin thing is scaring people out of that. That's why they were gone.
Well, one would think that they would scare. Well, if put it this way, I would believe you, Gary, if the enemy had a job right now. I mean,
thank you.
What gets me is that
he's ass up. I'll be in D.C. It ain't no guarantee he getting that Washington job.
And to be quite honest with you, that's no. I mean, he's gonna go from a two-time world champion to
That's not even a lateral move. No, no. And guys, this is the sad part about it, that they've already said they got somebody else and waiting. And then the Baltimore Ravens went to the college rank, and Jackson hadn't even signed a contract there. And what I'm saying right now, well, that Jim Caldwell, I'm happy Jim Caldwell got on, but Jim Caldwell should have had a head coaching job already. And for him to come back as offensive coordinator of the Panthers is pretty sad. But he'll get a fat-ass check, though.
Let's look at this. Doug Peterson goes from the Jaguars to the Eagles, right?
All the way around, from the Eagles to the Jaguars.
Don't forget who was there the year before him at the Jaguars.
Mike
and messed everything up.
Goes from the Green Bay Packers.
The ass chaser.
To Dallas, right?
Right.
Only yeah.
One black coach has gone from one team to the other. You know who that is? Tom Bowles from Tampa Bay to New York. New York to Tampa Bay. That's it. 32 teams.
But check it out. Did y'all hear what Sean Payton said on Press Row about the Washington job? Supposedly one of the high rollers that was going to buy the team came to him and said, look, you coach with the Giants. You coach in the NFC East with the Cowboys, and you know how the NFC East is. He said when he came there in the Saints and saw the Saints fans taking over the stadium, he said, what the hell happened? He said, it used to be times you couldn't even get a ticket in here. Now, this is ridiculous. The guy told him point blank, if he bought the team, he wanted Sean Payton to take over the team. And that means a certain coach there now asked for the ass out. If I'm Rivera, the coach of the Bird and Go, I'm getting scared because that's telling me that if the new owner come in there, his ass is gone.
I think he's already gone anyway.
He should be. You got to earn the right to stay. And
well, how the heck can Eric Bieniemy get a job if they got a new owner coming in? And that new owner ain't got to keep the staff.
Exactly.
Well, he's got to put it this way. This team has been sold for the last 2-3 years, but Snyder's still there.
No paperwork.
Wake me up when he's not the owner anymore.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So we've been, you know, it's like
when a man at Amazon can pump down to check out his booty money and he still ain't signed the papers, something else is going on.
Well, look, it's like every year where people keep trying to fire Mike Mike Tomlin's basically been fired for the last 10 years, and he still has the job.
Don't forget that fire sheet to call him a nigga. Don't forget that he's been calling nigga more than Kuja Kinte.
But see, here's the thing, Reg. That fire chief is out of a job. Mike Tomlin's still there.
It's basically like.
That's the thing. When Daniel Snyder no longer owns Washington, then I'll believe. But it's been almost, you know, we've been hearing these rumors for the last 5 years now.
But I'm not joking. Let me remind you, Doug Williams was pissed. There ain't no question when he sat back in that huddle and looked at everybody and he said, Gary, 23X cross slant and Gary Clark's in the end zone. Or couldn't
he need time to light these boys up.
Yeah, exactly. Or even Timmy Smith, he just said 38 blast. Nothing simple. Nothing simple about it. He just tore through and let his speed through the rest.
Yeah. Hey, but do you guys notice that Doug has some kind of illness? I look at his face lately. His face is puffed up. He takes some kind of medication because his face has really changed the last 6 months.
But if you notice, when it comes to scores, they very rarely mention the Washington score over Denver. They may mention Doug winning, but they never really mention the score. because
they don't want anybody to know that ass whooping they put on him.
That's right. He took the whitest white that the NFL had.
That's,
and he wiped it all over his ass and between his crotch and scrubbed his toes and said, "I got the white right here for you." And that's the kind of shit people understand, because you get tired. I know Doug had to be tired. You know, everybody black at some point or another has had their character questioned. It's never a question of whether or not we're who we are. There's always that magic word, but. There's always but. And whenever there's a but, you got to always have some issue with somebody somewhere questioning who and what you are. And those things stick in your craw. And that's why you can say to yourself, enough. And I have a feeling that Doug said enough. And that's the reason why that game was so entertaining. We felt Doug's anger. I mean,
yeah.
Am I wrong here?
I've always said that is still the most important quarter in football history because of the 35 he put up. I mean, nothing really compares to that, because it's not something where they can pass it off as a fable, or that it was working. See, I find it interesting that, you know, the more the Chiefs win, the more people scream about how he's got the refs in his pocket. Have you, you know, and it's almost like everybody has a collective memory loss in regards to a certain team in Foxborough. But that's just me. That quarter, that 35-point quarter. I mean, think of all the great quarterbacks that have played in the Super Bowl. No one's ever done that.
Aaron Rodgers is a line two from the cave. Aaron Rodgers is a line two from the cave. If he retired, white folks would really be upset.
No Hall of Fame quarterback that's ever been in a Super Bowl, or any quarterback in general, has ever had that kind of a quarter.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No,
they want to cover up history, just like they're scrubbing away black history and slavery and everything.
They want to scrub it away. Put it this way: knowing how they like to say things, within 30, 40 years from now, they're gonna try to tell you that it was that Justin Herbert had that 35-point quarter in the Super Bowl.
You know that.
Let me go to my story in here, because two things stuck on me as I sat and analyzed the game. One was the fact that Philadelphia scored 35 points. There's no team in the league that averaged 35 points a game. They played well. It wasn't right for penalties. It wasn't any stupid roughing the passer deals. Although there were a couple of holding penalties.
Did they call any roughing the passer?
Other than the call at the end, this was about as clean of a World Series, Super Bowl that I can remember. You know?
They let them play. That's a damn sure. They let them play. But that false start, I really think if Philly hadn't had that false start where it was going fourth and they got 5 yards back and then Hurst fumbled the next play, I think if they had made that first down, I think they were going to go ahead and score up and go up 14 points. And that was really shocked the game.
Because of the way the game was played and how it played out, Every possession counted. You know, and now, when they called the play, the first thing I thought of, and again, I'm showing my age, Benny Barnes, Super Bowl 30.
Oh, yeah.
My cousin, number 31, Benny Barnes.
I mean, if that call is made in the third week of the season, it's like, oh, well, go get them next week. But it's a 35-35 Super Bowl, that's a help. You know, the kid admitted it that he held him, and he did. He thought he could get away with it, and you know, nine times out of ten.
Tell you. If he's going to score on you, grab him so he doesn't make a touchdown. They tell you
exactly,
that.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's again. It sucks that the game came down to that. It really does.
That's true.
It really does.
Played on both sides, and the brothers were showing up, and we like that. But Professor Quez Watkins dropped that 7 route. If he makes the catch, they've got the ball inside the Kansas City 15. Even if they just kick a field goal, the score is 30-21, and the clock is the Eagles' friend and not the Eagles' enemy. So what say you? Was there something else I might have missed? And good evening.
Good evening. I'm not the one to ask about
the historian.
A lot of detail for this. Super Bowl 5-7, unfortunately, I was asleep, literally.
God bless you.
My situation is so bad when they were setting the ball up for that final kick and trying to drain the time away. I almost missed it because I forgot. I was on the phone with a friend of mine who called themselves actually watching the game.
Yeah.
Although her knowledge of football is only so-so at best because she was in the band, which means she had to go to ball games, and she talked to her friends doing that kind of stuff. Having said that, and I think I was what I do remember was at one point the score was 7-7 tie. I don't remember 14. The only reason I know anything about 14-7 and 21, I think in 7, is because I watched the highlights.
Okay.
I remember seeing Rihanna, whoever, whatever her name is, with the red dress and the guy hanging in the air and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't watched halftime and God knows when, because I think the last time I watched halftime was the year that Texas Southern performed with whoever. Did a halftime show and Texas Southern Band showed off for 10 seconds, and then they went to something else. The Super Bowl hasn't been super to me, and God knows when, because for one, there've only been 8 Super Bowls with the Steelers in it, and because of that, you know, I remember watching highlights for Greg Lloyd, and even he says. You know, in his nice mellow way, he said he still wanted to kill. I think his name was Neil O'Donnell, was the quarterback.
Yeah.
The one who had three open wide receivers and threw straight
that
at
McDonald. That was McDonald.
Well, Larry Brown was open on all three of those picks.
No shit.
Yeah. He threw a bullet to a wide open defensive back for the other team. namely that team from Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
And I have been so out with the Super Bowl and for the last 20 years that the only reason I would go to when I the members of the church have Super Bowl parties, I go to eat.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they have ever said to me is, Fred, you got to stop snoring, do it again.
Yeah. There you go. Well, you know,
in my case, I think so little of professional football anyway, and it's headed for the same kind of resolution that I have come to with in the NBA. The only thing I'm looking forward to in the NBA right now is my nephew, who I think is a sophomore in high school, maybe a junior, who's one of the best players in the state of North Carolina. I'm looking forward to him making a lot of money. Remember that I'm his favorite uncle. And we'll work from there. Give me a good CIAA. This year, through streaming, I've been able to watch a lot of games from the SIAC and as well as the FLAC online and whatnot.
Well,
give me the good HBCU game, football or basketball. I'm happy because most of this crap they're feeding us
from the
professional level is just that crap.
But we have to say it was a good game. Both quarterbacks afforded themselves well. The stakes were very few. For the most part, we got to raise our glass to the field goals.
What, you got breaking news or something?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, what's the breaking news?
Turn up. Now, having said that, Chris Berman and the Mouse,
that
of
racist.
Course, had to fuck things up. Coming in there with the Abe Lincoln crack. Of course, the game stayed on the 12th. Which
say what?
Hold on.
Say what?
Oh, of course. You forgot that?
What did he say?
Well, it's not even the fact that he said something. It's the fact that here he is. He can't handle the enormity of the two brothers just playing and the aspect of excess that they put out there. You know, at his best, he was always a moron. So when it comes to being a total asshole, he could go all the way, and he did, by showing his ignorance with the two brothers playing. And, you know, as Patrick Farrar would say, someone needs to be jacksmacked. But I digress. As a matter of fact,
twice.
I think Patrick's here. What's up, Patrick?
What's up, fellas? Everybody's good.
We're good.
What's up, Newt?
Live and living color. Yeah, somebody be jab smacked. Yeah. Big time.
The only real question I had in regard to the Super Bowl is, whose idea was it to put a pregnant woman on a gondola 100 feet up in the air? That's the only question.
He paid for it.
Tony, I tell you what. I had a guy last week that I know, Chang guy, I've known for a while. He said he had a picture on Facebook with a piece of with some Tabasco sauce pouring down his eye, saying that he's gonna have torturers out in the halftime show. Okay? So I put on his Facebook thing. I said, Well, he said he wanted to see a band. So I looked down at my face. I said, look here. Them days are over.
They're over because
of the fact that, as I said, the NFL is making too much money for the halftime show.
Thank you.
One.
Yeah,
number two, the demographic of the construct of the halftime show is not for us. It's for the 17 to 34-year-old demographic.
Yeah.
Hey, Patrick, isn't it true that she outdrew the Super Bowl as far as viewers?
Let me tell you what happened. And that's the whole that's the third thing. The Super Bowl had $113 million viewership. Now, going back to the halftime, you know during the halftime, the Super Bowl viewership went up 18 points to 118 million people watching.
That's what I heard. More people watching than the Super Bowl.
So, Tony, you're right. She's pregnant. She's in the, on top of the, coming out of wherever she was coming out of. But, baby, when she came down, she landed into more money than she had before.
Jackass
Stephen A. Smith to shut the hell up when it comes to Beyonce and Rihanna.
Could it be possible the NFL actually paid her at this point?
No. If I was involved, something was worked out. Because Apple was involved.
Yes.
They sponsored. Apple sponsored. So, you know, they got more money than the government.
Apple sponsored a halftime show.
Oh, yes, they did.
Lord. Somebody got paid overseas money.
Didn't you see that commercial? That commercial was basically running ad nauseum since about October.
Thank you. And I would say Beyonce was around anyway, but that's okay.
I didn't watch halftime show, no way.
But we all know Prince still holds the number one spot.
In a torrential rainstorm
with a do-rag on. Go ahead, Prince.
Michael's about third.
And the ones was good. Beyonce was good with Coldplay. Turned it out.
Yeah.
She turned it out. And know what the next one was the best one? Bruno Mars turned it out too.
Bruno Mars is pretty good.
But I think they put Beyonce number three now, I think, as far as overall. I think they stayed up to number three.
Numbers-wise, performance-wise, but that's what it's about. It's about numbers.
George Clinton in the halftime. I would love that.
Patrick, the million-dollar question, how much money was bet on that one game? Did it set a record?
Now, last week, as of last Friday, they estimated it be 50 million adults were betting on it with a price of $168 billion.
Even that seems low.
Yeah.
$180 billion.
It had to be more than that when the game was over. I didn't get the final numbers yet, but I knew as a Friday that was put down.
Hey, T-Mac, we don't know what Fingers and them got and how much money the Fingers and them were picking on the pot.
If you were just talking about literally and figuratively betting on the game, when you consider all the other prop bets and everything like that, and especially now, now that you have 20, 30 states now where it's legal to bet?
Yep. Boy, that seems low.
Again,
I ain't got the phone. That was a Friday. On top of all that,
this Sunday, there's going to be football. The XFL starts this season.
They actually start Saturday night.
Speaking of Washington, Patrick,
give us the real deal with a certain offensive coordinator from Kansas City. What's the real deal?
You know something? I don't want to start cussing, man, really.
I know.
We know that.
Get that brother a drink. Give him a drink.
You know something? The worst situation in terms of the disrespect is not only it started by, of course, you know, the enemy and Sherman Lewis. Give me a break. He was a part of four Super Bowls, and he can't get high. I mean, the enemy now is bought it too. You know, at this point, this is what I'm saying. If Eric, stay with Kansas City as long as you can until you get the right situation. Because if I'm his agent, I'm saying, look, if we can't get moved up, stay right where you are. Because when they offer, this is what I want. If you can't get one more, I'm staying right where I am. Because I, you know, obviously they can get Joe Blow and Bobby Macaroni to get a coaching job out of anywhere.
No shit.
If I got Mahomes, I'm winning.
Yeah. For some reason, this reminds me when Dallas was successful and they hired Dave Wannstedt. Wannstedt was coordinator. But Wannstedt wasn't shit. I think he got the Bears job, and of course he fell flat on his face. But we already know this job is not for the brothers. You got to hire somebody, and somebody has got to hire you. Now, D'Amico Ryans gets hired because Houston's a dump, and they're going to ask him to save Houston until the white guy gets there. Now, what will they do on top of everything else? And it's more than just Gary complaining about they need to hire black coaches. They need to put black guys in situations where they have a shot.
And know something else, Mike, they need to have some black executives to be in those rooms to really boost the fact that we need it. To help those guys.
Until you get black presidents, black GMs, black
and black owners.
Yeah. 100% correct. We know about the coaches. I understand that. But guys, they got to have somebody, a spokesperson for them. To help, you know, there's a saying that I've used in business for years. We all know that the old saying is not what you know, it's who you know. But when I got involved in sports marketing at various teams, what the real deal is not who you know, it's not what you know, who you know, but the thing is, who knows you? Who knows you is, I can get Mike in the door because I know Mike. But does Mike know Tony because Tony's making decisions?
Exactly. The thing that people keep forgetting about the Rooney Rule is that it just guarantees you the interview. It doesn't guarantee you the job.
It never guarantees
the job. And see, that's the thing.
That's the problem.
Take it a step further, okay? You know, it's all about who you know and who knows you and all that kind of good stuff. But remember this. As sorry as he was as a coach, Matt Rhule has a major job at a major institution in one of the top five families of college football. I know people who are attached to who played at Nebraska and all that kind of stuff, who are still wondering if they're going to give any more money to Nebraska because they've already seen. And my question to them was, you know, how can you alter the guy who has proven his incompetence?
Right.
He was so good at the collegiate level. He was no good at the professional level, and with a storied program like Nebraska, here this dumb white boy got a good job at a good institution. You know who don't mind forking over 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million a year for him, and then he turns around and sues the team that he proved to him. used to prove how incompetent he was.
You know, Fred's point definitely bears repeating, because I can't think of a program who went downhill that's gone downhill as badly as Nebraska. When I was in my early teens,
I think I can give a similar one to Nebraska.
Okay.
Colorado.
Yes.
They got three brothers that ran away from there.
Well, remember, they were both part of the old Big Eight, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, look, it's you know, ever since that whole big purge years ago with the conferences, where basically it's more about money grabs than territory. I mean, I still think it's kind of ridiculous that Nebraska and Oklahoma don't play each other every year. That's just me. I think now, for all intents and purposes, it didn't hurt Oklahoma at all. But for whatever reason, it seems as though when Nebraska basically got away from their old roots, you know, the end, you know, as we all know, the end used to stand for knowledge, wink wink, nudge nudge. But now
I'm backing up you and Fred on this.
I'll tell you this much. I'm with both of y'all because there's a guy I know that has said what you said, but in much more detail, about having the lineage of that school's history being taken away by people who are new to the game in Nebraska, but have ignored similar traditions. And he knows intimately, which is why now he's only going back to Nebraska only twice, actually the last year, because they're starting to open up a little bit. He forgave him. And he was the third person. He was the only lineman to ever finish third in Heisman. Richard Glover, who I played ball with.
Mm-hmm.
Richard
and I
are very close. Richard
okay.
told me,
that's
the problem is they brought Matt Rule in because Matt Rule, you know, he boosted the program at Temple and other colleges. We knew what was going to happen to the pros. We knew what was going to happen to the pros. He showed that. Mm-hmm.
Glover said they
brought him on because they figured that he can map. Hopefully, he's a better college coach than he was a pro.
And that's part of the problem. And see, you know, 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, they would never hire a Bo Pelini or a Scott Frost or a Frank Solich.
Because Scott played quarterback in Nebraska. That's why.
Yeah, but they, you know, even then, I still would, you know, I don't think 10, 15 years ago they would have brought in a Scott Frost. Now, the fucked up thing is that they had their future guy for so long.
Yeah.
But they gave him the enemy treatment, and that was Turner Gill. And Turner Gill wound up turning a winner in Buffalo.
That's right.
So, if anything, the Scott Frost hire is sort of the curse of their curse of the Bambino in regard for not hiring Turner Gill.
That's right.
Tony, let me ask you a question. What's the mascot of the Huskers look like?
That's a good question.
Some white guy eating niblets through the last time I remember. With a big ass hat.
Blonde blue white guy. That should tell you something, bro. Big time.
Absolutely. Look, the only black guys they brought in there were for the football team, and it was those guys went through culture shock and chill blades when they got down to Nebraska, but you know. Not a chance to play though, and Rule. Look, Rule is there strictly as a recruiter. I mean, his X's and O's
are, yeah, you know, he, you know, he's not Luke Rodney. Hell, he's not even Jerry Faust at this point.
Well, it'll be interesting what he's going to do. I tell you, one thing that happened in the Big Ten is interesting. And Loxley from Maryland, guess who we had as his offensive coordinator?
Oh,
Kevin Sumlin, who used to be at Stanford.
Yeah.
That's going to be real interesting, brother.
The thing with them is the thing that would help them, and I guess like Rutgers and what have you, everybody can't go to, everybody can't go to Michigan, everybody can't go to Ohio State, everybody can't go to
Penn State,
Penn State or Michigan State or what have you. So what happens with them is if they can get. It's like an old Al McGuire statement. While everybody's getting all the McDonald All-Americans and whatever, I want to try to get the Wendy's All-Americans and the Hardee's All-Americans and turn them into, McDonald's All-Americans. And that's the thing. And what's good there is that, again, you got a couple of brothers that, that have been through the wars. I think that they coached together at another place years ago at the Simpsons, did they not? So but see, it goes back to what you're saying about relationships.
I'm gonna give another one that's brewing, but we don't know if it's gonna be. We don't know what's gonna go through yet. Marcus from Notre Dame's coach, Marcus Freeman. All right.
Yes.
Do he's looking at bringing in. He's looking to bring in. The coordinator who just left, Tom Brady
Tampa Bay. Byron Leftwich.
Byron Leftwich. He's looking to see if he can bring him in.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's what you know, but who knows you?
I don't trust them priests. I don't care how nice they seem to be.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, but see, let's see what happens. Who knows? But yeah, you got to
see what happens.
Fred, you got the XFL, and in 4 or 5 weeks after that,
the USFL
starts all over again. So. Are you guys good with football all year long?
No.
I'll watch it. Look, your hardcore football fans will, they'll have a little withdrawal, but they'll watch it eventually. Let's see. What's always funny to me is that you get these idiots, it's not the NFL. Of course. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Of course. I mean, if they're not going to watch it because of that, then, whatever. That's the ass backwards way of thinking if you're going to watch it, will it hate the NFL? Okay, fine. They said the same thing about the old USFL. They said the same thing about the AFL. And,
Now, Tony, what you got to watch out for in what XFL is this? Let's see the quality and the amount of ads that FanDuel and all the other bidding entities advertise on their group.
You read about that? They went hardcore in the betting aspect.
If it's anything like those first years of both of those leagues, then it's almost like it's a 3-hour. Infomercial for FanDuel and DraftKings with a sprinkling of football mixed in between. That first year of the XFL, they were shameless with it. They really
shameless
were.
About it. Yes, they were. They did not hesitate. And like I said, it was like talking to your bookie. It was like the next thing you know, it's 53 over under. You got to score X this, X that to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And now what are you going to do? They followed the spread and the amount of points scored faster than anybody.
And Mike, the only interruption is going to be the NCAA tournament. Should they go back right back there then?
Yes, they will. Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a difference.
What they do. It's amazing what they do and what they get away with. But I want to call your attention to New Mexico State. Now, New Mexico State's in that part of the country where college basketball is all they have. Now, Albuquerque has a million people. It's a big enough city. If the National Football League wanted to create a desert division of Albuquerque, Arizona, San Antonio, and the Texas teams, they could get away with it. But there's nothing out there but the Aggies and the Lobos. And
you got that right.
The basketball program is shot to shit because apparently they went too far with the hazing. They were tickling each other's balls and smacking each other's asses and whatever the fuck it is. So that next thing you know, the program's dead. Nobody said as to what really why or what fraternity is responsible, but, you know, full disclosure, I'm a member of a community fraternity called the Order of the Bonnet that's been in existence in Harlem since the 40s. And I can't understand for the life of me why somebody would go to the extent that they do. It's like what we found out about FAMU, where
the band,
the
Marching
Band, yeah, the band, the fucking band.
Come on, there's yo.
An effect. And then,
the band
and,
is called KK Sire.
Yeah. What a waste.
The freaking band. And know some. It was the players. It was hazing the players on your team that you got to play with. What the hell is that
yeah.
about? Give me
exactly.
a break.
It's stupid.
Well,
but they suspended the program.
As a lifelong non-Greek who never understood Greeks, nor have I ever understood pledging such as it is, how insecure do you have to be to pledge? I never got that. Because my brother and I had numerous conversations. He was an Omega. He was telling me all the great attributes of Omega, and then he mentioned some other of the Fab Five of the Greek for men. And I eventually told him, to me, that is just total bullshit, because.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I did not apologize because his first name was Reverend. I never, as a freshman, I saw things and heard things about pledging, and I saw where guys were being dropped off at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They're having to come pick up guys out of the rooms, and I said no, because
yeah.
you know he was an Omega, and I told him he and I had a conversation years later. I said based on what I knew, even the little that I knew even then, if I had pledged and some of the things that I know happened to guys that I knew, because being an RA, we got to pick up and clean up behind these fools on several occasions. And I said, no, if I had pledged and some of the stuff that I know about it happened to me, I mean, this was years after I graduated, because he mentioned going grad chapter. So no. By the time I got to college, I had managed a farm starting at 14 years of age. I had run a company that had employees starting at 14 years old before I was just going into high school.
Right.
What is it that Omega or any other organization like that, what can they do for me? I'm already an honor student. So what can they do for me? And that was always my question. And I said, if some of the things that I know happened, had happened to me, I would be dead or still hunting down Omegas or whoever, because ain't no way. I reached a point at 14 years of age, I told my father, that's the last beating I'm taking. So if I say that to him, and this is a man who had a shotgun that carried a double-aught buckshot at all times. So nobody, you know, we never had to worry about people sneaking up on us because we were ready for the Indians and whoever else. But I never understood that. And I told him, you know, based on the stuff that I know, I don't care how good it got, you know, as an Omega, Kappa, or anything else. You would never do that to me, and then I'd be your brother. That has always bothered me.
I don't understand.
And to have seen guys die online and girls die online, and don't think the girls didn't take some ass whippings and some other things too.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like, what merit is there in this? What value is there in this? My nephew went to Northeastern in Boston, and he was talking about pledging. And I said, if you go there and you pledge, I'll whip your ass my damn self. It's like, there's no way. You're not going to get there just for no pussy. It's like, think like somebody who's got some sense or is afraid to act like you know. And you know, it's everywhere. So it ain't going to get bigger and it ain't going to get better being part of a fraternity. And hopefully he listened to what I said. But the bottom line was, why? Not W, not X, but why would you just give in to a Animal House mentality and let these people decide what was important to you? I'll never understand that. And I got my man Eric Satterwhite getting ready to answer the question. Eric, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. What's happening, my brother?
What's going on?
All is love, so, man. How's everybody doing?
How you doing, bro? We're talking about New Mexico State and their issues with fraternities. Apparently, they killed their program. The season's over. What the hell happened?
Talking about New Mexico State.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of really interesting about, you know, these collegiate programs, as they're called, and the level of heinous activities, you know, that transpire under the guise of student athletes in collegiate sports. And one must recollect, you know, I believe, wasn't it the Baylor's basketball program where a player was killed and Dave Bliss was the coach and
the
player
went
missing for a long time and one of the other players allegedly killed him. You know what I mean? And there was a situation, I mean, that was a real tragic situation. And, you know, unmasking that thing, Bliss to this day, you know, feels that, I don't know if it was Baylor or not. I want to make sure I get the school right. It may have been, but I know the coach's name was
it? I think it was Baylor.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I don't want to just, you know, castigate a school that may not, but it was, okay, it was. And when you, you know, and when I start unpacking that story, you know, and start, you know, liaising with some people I know, and I mean, well, you know, again, it was operating. Bliss to this day feels like blames the player who was killed, and they found his body. And I recall seeing a story in it where the investigator was a female, you know, who does the forensics. When they investigated the area, somehow they got a lead, and they were talking about the decomposition, you know, like what they were, how they were able to trace it, you know, and you know, it was really, like I said, you know, tragic event for this person. I believe, you know, he was out here from, you know, Northern California region. But Bliss, you know, has some interesting statements. You know, he may mention that this guy was, you know, slinging. You know, I'm just going to leave the word slinging there, not saying, you know, illegal contraband. He was slinging illegal contraband.
Yeah, he was.
And you know what I mean? And he swears to this day that, you know, it was independent. But then there was, you know, other players who, basically said, you know, he, you know, Bliss was complicit in, you know, recruiting a player who he knew. I guess the brother was from Maryland, who was allegedly the murderer, who's still in jail today, you know, mm-hmm. was someone he kind of coerced. But what it, all the whole story was, without, you know, every detail being, you know, gone through, was how it was all internalized, right, within the program.
Right.
Right. It wasn't externalized. It was all the mayhem, the tragedy, the crap that was taken, crap that's manifested that was taking place, was within the corridors of the program. Now, we have seen where women's coaches have been hired, right, for overworking players, right? You know, there's stories out there. I believe it was another university in Texas where it was a female coach, and, you know, they had this training program where you had to have a certain amount of cardio, right? Like, allegedly programs who do well have a cardio level you get to, and so they're really pushing the players. And then to say the players who are a little more, you know, physically inclined to be considered heavy set were getting tortured.
Exactly.
You know, verbally, trying to meet that goal. And then the transfer rate was so super high. When they started unpacking it again, all internalized, all within the corridors of the program, no external outsiders. So same thing with New Mexico State. You know, when I looked at the, you know, the overview of that and what's taking place, all within the corridor. So these players get recruited, they find a certain height that they, you know, they can do this with, and then the treatment and this will to win and to try to get, you know, that tournament money and all these things like that, you know, it's just tragic events, you know, in terms of, you know, what's taking place with in the corridors of these systems, but then there's larger programs too. You know, that's still going through that. So all that NIL shit, you know, that people thought was going to be some kind of hocus pocus, miracle work, and, you know, K-Sara, Sara, everything's going to be beautiful. It's just more pimpology 101.
Yep. No
and
doubt about that. They never give you a chance to catch your breath. Gary, when did you first hear about problems with the swim team?
10 years ago. And because this woman was an Olympic star, because he had the gold medal, because he had all the stuff behind her, they couldn't get her out.
They left her alone. Mm-hmm.
That's the Michigan State story, right, with the gymnast.
Yeah, really.
You know, this guy's affiliated with the, you know, he's affiliated with the Olympics. You know, gold medalists go through here, go through the same trainings. And, you know, Bella Caroli down there in Texas in the gymnast school. And they're all linked in this network, you know. And, you know, these things take place, you know, all the time. And we see Ohio State Wrestling had an issue, you know, with, you know, some strange activity. You know what I mean? Within the corridors of the program. So these athletes, when you send these kids, when you send these young people out to go to these universities and they're hiding behind the titles of the Big Ten, national television, and all this, that is just smoke.
Well, I'm sitting here and studying about how they're tickling the balls of the members of the frat and smacking each other on their asses and stuff. And it wasn't like attaboy and all that. I'm like, what kind of freaky shit is this?
And that's all you know. But, you know, what? I mean, coaches know this shit. You know, they're just as perverted as the fucking players.
Mm.
You know, no head coach. There's not a head coach in any program that doesn't know what's going on in their program. That's the first lie.
Thank you.
And this whole philosophy started in high school. Trust me, I've been there. I've been in high school, okay? So say something going on as I begin.
Well, it takes a lot of money to just shut a season down.
What's up, Fred?
We'll see Mike, you know, he just hit the nail on the head. Okay. One, when we used to go to tournaments, as wrestlers, one of the shocking things to us as from my institution, being from an HBCU, we had, you know, there was always this whole thing about making weight.
Okay.
You arrive, you have these mandatory weigh-ins, say at 10 or 11, or for a regular match, you arrive at 4 o'clock. You match at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
If you were an ounce or two over, you got that length of time to go back and make weight. So you had saunas, you had running, you had all this other torturous stuff. And see, if you were the visiting team, you're gonna catch hell in with it. You probably drunk something on your way, and you know, 2-3 hours away, you lay in, and so you know, you go out and hear the track and all this kind of stuff. But at some of these bigger schools, I'll give you number one of the best wrestling institutions ever, Iowa and Iowa State. Those guys were so bulimic that those guys would go to a weigh-in and be 10 ounces over. They made a beeline to the bathroom, putting their fingers down their throat.
The Gravel Boys.
And we go to a tournament where you may have as many as 20 schools there. Mm. Oh man, you didn't go. You know, once they had weigh-in, you went and got your clothes, and you put your wrestling togs on, and you stayed out of the bathroom because it was gross on its best day. Because the white boys. They would, whatever they ate the last few hours, they would bring it all back up, whether it was.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
I mean, these guys were it was Bark City, and to say the coaches didn't know, the coaches knew. If the coaches knew their name, they knew everything that they were doing. Matter of fact, to a degree, they prescribed, and there used to be some kind of stuff that you can take that actually will make you bark. They had their own, you know, this was stuff that cost money that we didn't have. But these white kids, they would, you know, they would make a beeline to the bathroom, and the next thing you hear, and then they would go back and lay again. And you can do it. You can make yourself throw up twice before it won't do any good. And then they would do. I mean, these guys would be so dehydrated from being in the sauna, it was pathetic too. But this is the price they pay.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, you know, who's this cat? Dan Gable, right? Coach of Iowa.
Dan Gable.
He won all those national championships. I mean, they got it down to a science, man. You know, I remember. I think it's. I'm going to keep it off these direct schools, but it was a ACC school in Florida football. Mm-hmm. You know, guys come in, you know, weighing 190, and they put them on a regimen by the time they're, you know, seniors at 270. But the whole diet and the lift program and what to eat is mapped out, right? Mapped out. Mm-hmm. It's a 4-year plan. And so everyone mm-hmm. knows what they're eating, what they're doing. It's a plan. You see a guy come in and all of a sudden they change on the trajectory. And then one of the other key major factors that they involve in each one of these division, well, for collegiate football, they all got painkillers.
Mm.
They all got to pick that shit up. You know, I mean, you're coming from high school football, you know, to major college football, the contact is totally different. And you got to adjust to that pain. You know what I'm saying? And you got to adjust to that damn pain. And for you to get to that certain level, you got to get on that prescription program. And I know for a fact that there was a student athlete, you know, in the land of Troy, you know, so it's a Troy. And, you know, and I know of his family personally, and I know of this, you know, individual personally. And, you know, he was given, you know, painkillers, you know, right? You know, through this process, his family sued. And he had a heart attack. You never heard the national story.
He showed up on Nightline one time, you know, so it is a Nightline story, and he had a heart attack. Young man, prime of his life. And they said what they felt it was, you know, the painkiller. And it totally effed up his draft stock, right, because he had that issue, you know, and he had a little bit of love in the Canadian Football League, you know, and so that's what happened. And, you know, these things that transpire, man, it's anything but, you know, glory and glitz and shit. You got to give up a lot. You got to give up some stuff in that mm-hmm. crap that's manifest, man.
No doubt. Listen, mm-hmm. this should happen. But, again, you're spending a lot of money for a program to just cut it off like that. You got to be answerable to somebody. As of right now, we have no idea who said pull the plug. The Aggies were 9-15 or some shit like that. So they
it's the
going
stitch,
anywhere.
Man. It's the
and
stitch
Mike,
that pulled the plug.
And Mike, you know something else, Mike? You'd rather pull the plug before the NCAA comes in and just destroys
exactly.
even more.
Well, this is criminal. See, that what happens is it's a total nuclear, there's a thermonucleation of the whole process. Mm-hmm. This turns into a Penn State scenario where the president, the board of trustees, the ADs, you know, where you at, Clemenza? Pain in the ass, innocent bystanders. All these people get jammed. This is criminal. Mm-hmm. See, it's a little different. And state institutions run on state money. You know what I mean? So everyone in the state hierarchy, they, you know, can get lettered A to B. So it's the criminality of this process that shuts it down. The athletic shit, that's 2 seconds, man. You know what I mean? They can shut the athletic crap down. And SMU did it. They were like, uh-oh, too many bodies buried. Let's close it down. And then they'll revive you. They'll resuscitate you. You know what I mean? But the thing is, if it's criminal, I mean, this shit is criminal, man. I mean, it's a lot of, like I said, heinous things that go on. We, you know, I mean, in this athletic realm, man, and, you know, the Johnnies and Joes, the way they get manipulated and used, that shit. I mean, how does Dexter Manley go 4 years without being able to spell the letter A?
No shit.
Wasn't his coach Jimmy Johnson, the great Hall of Famer?
It surely
Jimmy
was.
Didn't know
that,
Dexter
yeah.
couldn't read.
They didn't,
and he's sitting there in front and center. How about them Cowboys?
People were freaking. But it's not unusual because there was a hockey coach who couldn't read either. I mean, a National Hockey League coach, Jacques Demers. He couldn't fucking read. And it wasn't because this was English as opposed to French. This fucking guy couldn't read. I don't know how.
Joe Gibbs didn't know either. Yeah, the great Joe Gibbs didn't know Dexter couldn't read.
Yeah, really.
They know.
It's a fucked up shit.
It doesn't matter when you get paid. It doesn't matter. Look, let's get real, right? Regular government, you have to have a B plus average. Right. Football, you have to have a B plus average.
Okay.
How many people really have a B plus average in government? Come on, let's be real here. Right?
It depends on what major you take.
Well, Cal, you know, Cal's never relaxed, quote unquote, like Stanford. That was Shaw's problem with Stanford. You know, NIL money, Stanford wasn't that wide open to opening the floodgates to NIL. As well as they weren't going to lower their academic standards, allegedly, right? And that's what took place.
Cal and Stanford are going to be in trouble because they cannot compete against other schools. Why is the program going to fall down to zero because they can't compete?
And that wine and cheese crowd doesn't care because, you know, there's a number in the Cal State University system, which is, you know, on the Long Beach states, right? The Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, Sacramento State, right? You know, that's the Cal State University system. You know, there's players I knew, you know, locally who could, you know, ball a little bit and went to San Diego State, right? Because that's in that system as well. UC San Diego, Pepperdine, right? And so the educational system here will groom them for the Cal State University system academically, right? So they can be prepped to graduate, right, through the Cal State University. So what happens with players who could have played Pac-12, you know, maybe not UCLA and those type of schools like that because they have the national recruits, but may have been a Stanford player, may have been a Cal player, they couldn't get it. You know, I recall Johnny Dawkins recruiting a young man, you know, that, he ended up really having a good career at San Diego State. But he had to pump the brakes because of the academia thing at Stanford. You know, that they couldn't push him over the corridor. You know what I mean? So Stanford and those Cal schools, they're not even tripping on that shit. You know, they're not even trying to lax things. You know, you got to do the best you can with that particular program because it's a wine and cheese crowd elite attitude.
Well, one thing is going to go about future recruits now. They have now taken the SAT out the athletic programs. You don't got to take it no more. What's going on? And I say that's a direct hit, result of NIL, because you want to get a great player to come to your school. If you can't pass the SAT score to be eligible, well, you ain't got to worry about that no more.
Well, the trade-off to that is the clearinghouse, though. So there's this thing called the clearinghouse.
Clearinghouse, yes, indeed.
Cool all that shit out, right? Because the clearinghouse, you got to have the core classes.
Yes, you do.
That's my point. So they can reduce that, and you know what John Thompson was pushing way back in the day. You know when he was talking about, you know, this is not cats in, you know, inner city Baltimore are not, you know, being asked the difference between, you know, Nathan's mustard and Grey Poupon and shit. You know what I mean? It's like, what's the relevance, right? But that clearinghouse is no joke, though.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That clearinghouse, so there was a number of players I knew. Matter of fact, and there was a time when McCarthy was coaching, you know, Colorado. In this region, and you had them at the national championship level. If you're a Pac-12 school, you know, you've got to recruit good in Cali. Otherwise, you can't survive.
Yep.
All these schools are stacked with Cali players. Oregon, you know what I mean? Utah, why Utah rolls out, you know what I mean? They're all California players. You know, I mean, SC, UCLA, they got to have them, you know what I mean? Because the top programs are coming out of SoCal. And that's the largest section in the state, high school-wise.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so these other schools, you know, where Deion's got to get in at, you know, if he can't crack the California code, McCarthy Day was a little bit different, but Brothers ain't trying to play in the code, and he can't compete in NIL money with SC or UCLA. Mm-hmm.
Right about that. Fellas, here's a question. Chip Kelly ain't shit. And we know Chip Kelly made his bones at Oregon. And then he got involved with the Eagles and the Deshaun Jackson shit where he tried to put some shit on his name. Now I think he's coaching at UCLA.
He was Kaepernick's coach, yeah.
Okay, well, how the fuck did he first get there when they knew he did what he did? Did somebody follow his behavior and say, this guy's an asshole, cut him loose because of his potential to cause problems down the road?
No, it's an old boy. Michael, come on. Seriously? It's an old boy never, right?
Yeah, I figured as much, but I had to ask.
When Carl Durrell was coaching, he was a brother, right? Carl Durrell was coaching at UCLA. They're pretty good, right? And then Durrell was let go at Colorado. So again, the black coach at Colorado is old news and shit. He's, you know, the second in the last few years. Plus Mel Tucker was there, right? At Michigan State, he was at Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lasted about two
Kent
years.
State.
So but he was with the so-called Buffs. And so they've done this song and dance before, you know. And then, once the Michigan State job opened up, he bounced out. You know, he was out of there. You know, I mean, like, fuck this shit. You know what I mean? I'm off to MSU, and it's worked out for him. But the thing is, it's like, you know.
92 million.
He's doing well. I mean, he bounced out of Colorado, right? He got his first head coaching gig, had some big wins, and left out of there, right, you know, of his own free will. Darrell had nothing to work with, 1-10, you know, last year. They clipped him before it was all said and done. And so, you know, when you look at the patterns of how they've done brothers in the past, you know, what makes you the favorite Negro in the mix? We'll see. But moving forward with, like, the UCLA piece, so Darrell was there, but then they followed him, I think, a little bit later with, like, Jim Mora. What a waste of time bringing Jim Mora there.
Exactly. Well, waste time in Connecticut, too.
What a waste of freaking time. Jim Mora? Fuck. You know what I mean? And then they recycled Chip. You know what I mean? You know, because, you know, Chip was doing the promissory notes of this, that, and the other. So UCLA, you know, they got it filled out. You know, Riley's running shit down there at SC these days. But the thing, you know, but the point of the matter is these programs there, man, are not, they're tainted. It's all about how Mora was doing some real wild stuff himself. So, yeah, it's another story.
But he can get away with it because he can go to country clubs.
He's in the mix.
Yeah, no joke.
You know, the thing is, I think, you know, when G mentioned, like, you know, the money before I get paid, see, that has limitations, though, you know, because the whole coaching process is based on how you can keep rolling, how you can keep these gigs coming. And these guys have a shelf life, and their shelf life falls off where they end up.
Hold on, Gary. Doesn't a guy have a scarlet letter, so to speak, once they realize he's been involved in a program where the results have become fucked up? Or
it depends.
Get themselves... Oh, okay.
It depends, Mike. Mike, there is the country club and the boosters who in the country club who went to school or sons go to school, calling the right people, that can make a difference.
True. Okay.
Yeah, we see that with the dude from that took over the Jaguars, Meyer, right? He just imploded everything around him, you know, when he took that gig. But Herb's got, you know, some dome problems, though, right? Diagnosed.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but like you said, country club, I mean, he started off with hiring a dude, making racist comments, you know, his trainer, right? So-called, you know, conditioning coach, you know, this, that, and the other. And they looked left on that as well, you know, and, it, you know, but you know what, though? It goes back to, you know, the old school style, you know, where brothers were not begging to get in these locker rooms with these MFers.
True.
They're creating their own shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and building out on their own. I mean, you know, I mean, those brothers who raised the whole athletic mindset of HBCU coaching, I mean, you'll never see the likes of those individuals again. You know what I mean? You'll never see the likes of those individuals again. I've been saying that since Cuts of Voice. It's not the same ilk of character that was there. It's not even close.
Yeah.
You know, John McGlynn told George Steiber to get the fuck out of my locker room. You know what I mean? It's two places your ass can't be. You know what I'm saying? My bench in the city of Cleveland, there's two places you can't be. My locker room and my bench. None of these Uncle Toms or Thomasinas or Shuckling Jivers will ever even start a conversation like that.
So what is the Las Vegas Raiders' excuse? What's their excuse?
For what?
Look, you have a coach who doesn't know jack about what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't like that guy. McDaniels? Yeah, McDaniels.
That's right. You know, ain't he good, man? But yet, he's the star of the show down in Las Vegas. Come on, man. Stop it. What are you doing?
Gary, he's in the club, Gary.
He's linked with Belichick. He's linked with Belichick.
There you go.
I mean, he's linked with Belichick. He's linked with what's that owner's name?
Davis.
Mark Davis.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about New England. What's that guy's name? Kraft. Yeah, I mean, McDaniel's part of the Kraft crew.
And
Kraft is super juiced in.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, I mean, he's part of the network. I mean, we've seen it. The most heinous attempt was Jeff Saturday. What a waste of time that was.
And quite frankly, I'm predicting it's going to happen. Once Belichick leaves, McDaniel's going back to New England.
You think?
He can.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, he sure can. All day long. Yeah, he's juiced in. Brady's offensive coordinator. That's his rubber stamp for life. I was Brady's offensive coordinator.
Okay, yep. Guys, I have a question for all you guys. When Derek Carr did what he did in 2015, I remember, Derek Carr blasted Kaepernick for doing what he was doing. Right?
Yeah.
The Raiders were on their way to the playoffs at the time. The offensive line of the Oakland Raiders were all black.
Yep.
Just look at Derek Carr and say, what the hell is wrong with you? So they did the Ole Miss.
Gary, they did that to stab McKenzie in the back because McKenzie hired those guys. There were 25 guys ended up on a Raiders roster. Because of McKenzie. He picked the town. They went 12-4. They
he
made
sure
the playoffs.
Did. He said, Racy did a good job. You know, but the thing that, you know, I mean, Carr is Carr, man. He, you know, you watch him on the sidelines because he's talking to himself. And, you know, he threw the team under the bus in week 14. We're working so damn hard. You know, I mean, dude, this is what your gig is. You know what I'm saying? So, it was a matter of time before they broke, but did they break him off nicely right before his contract got guaranteed?
Yes, they did.
Right. I mean, that was like, oh shit. I mean, that was gangster. That was beyond some gangster-ish. I mean, they clipped him right before the loop got broken off, and that dummy didn't take the trade clause. If he took the trade clause, he could have maintained his cash and had his contract kept elsewhere. Nah, he bounced out. So he decided to get clipped, but Raiders again. What was that cat from Ohio State named Pryor? That quarterback Pryor, Aaron Pryor,
Terrell Pryor. That's right,
Terrell Pryor. Mm-hmm. Now he was doing work as a Raider quarterback. I dug him.
Yeah,
I mean, he actually had some really good games with some shitty coordinators and not the best team. He could have been there too. He's a fucking tight end or some shit.
Yeah, he played wide receiver. But also during that time. I think so. A couple of things have happened. To have coordinators realize that they put some of the college element into the game that works that they didn't want to put in to open the game up even more. Well, I think Terrell could have come in and maybe played now. At that time, they weren't going to let him play.
I mean, Terrell, he had some cool moments with nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
he had a 92-yard touchdown.
I was digging how he was running them, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, he got undercut like Kaepernick, right? Kaepernick is they changed the play on Kaepernick, right? You know, that read option, whatever they wanted to call it, Jeff Fisher.
That's right.
I mean, he almost went for 200 yards in the Packers in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They couldn't have it.
But again, they have coaches who fit the guys ability to his coaching style, not the reverse. People were still locked into the systems that they got now. And please, and it doesn't work. The game is opened up, and a lot of people still don't want to deal with it.
That's true.
They have to now because over half of the league are mobile quarterbacks. They have no choice
Well, really, if you want to win, you know what I'm saying? It comes down to if you want to win, you know, you got to get the best guy under center. Is Andy Reid the black quarterback whisperer? You know, it was,
guys who adjusted have done pretty well. Guys who have adjusted gonna have a hard time.
Correct.
Yeah, like the Jets have not adjusted yet.
Salah, yeah, Salah's a defensive dude. He can't spell offense if you spotted him the OFF. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Salah looks. He reminds me of Tomlin a little bit. If Tomlin could win every game with a field goal with 5 seconds left because his defense has held up, he's toasting, some Hennessy's and chicken wings at the game every week.
For real.
Mm-hmm.
That's the style of coaching. If he can clip you late, keep the game close, and beat you with a field goal, that's it. That's the style. My thought process, I like to hear the brothers weigh in, Mike as well, because I like how Mike can break down quarterbacks as well as Patrick as well, because he's got a gridiron background. Do you feel like a better head coach of an NFL team is someone who's offensively inclined or defensively inclined?
It's how open you are to adjust.
Yes. It is how open that's you adjust because it's your number one job to make these guys work. And the only way you make them work is make them believe that what you're doing is going to work. So it's actually mental before it's offense or defense.
Got it.
It's like,
so a Bill Walsh,
this is what I want you all to do. And this is what I'm
going to give a classic case.
As far as it doing it. Yeah.
I'm going to
so Sirianni's got an offensive guy, right? So Sirianni.
There you go.
So this Super Bowl had two offensive type minds. Offensive
there you go.
Reed and Sirianni. So then you got Bowles, and then you have, Tomlin, defensive guy, Belichick. I guess if you base it on the ring situation, then Belichick's a defensive coach. So was Lombardi and them dudes. Landry started off as defensive, too. I get it. So really, you're saying, a guy who's like Walsh, who's going to be straight offensive and Parcells was defensive, is basically how they can build the shit around. It doesn't matter if they know how to coach ball, what side of the ball they come from, is what I'm hearing.
And Eric, the offense is now so controlled. Guys realize, look, I'm a defensive coach. You take over that side of the ball and do what you can. Let me handle the other side. I mean, Sierra, that's why the coordinator guy supposedly got his job as head coach, because he fit the style of play to the quarterback, just like the guy in Baltimore fit the style of play to Lamar Jackson. Now, 90% of the guys don't want to do that. It's my system. They're working that.
Got it.
Bullshit.
That's right, because Harbaugh was a special teams coach.
Exactly.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
So
and
if you can fucking coach and shit, whatever the side of the ball don't really matter if you know how to really handle a staff.
Yep.
All right, cool.
And the case of Todd Bowles, I was around Todd all the years he was in Jets. Todd was all defense. He didn't have the right coordinator to help him out. I think he got undercut by a lot of white boys in the organization, but that's another story.
Yeah, because there's some mindsets out there. You got to hire this guy.
Let me ask you about in the thread. Was the Super Bowl what you hoped it would be? Was it what you thought it was going to be? And how would you rate the performance of the brothers playing?
They played well.
Mm.
Outstanding. His classic case, people kill me with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
On my show, I've had for years, 20-some-odd years, the label of my show was winning is more important than style points. Mahomes did not have exorbitant numbers. But did he win? Yes.
Yes, he did.
He didn't have 40 yards. He won the damn game. That's what I want to hear. So he's not throwing, and that was the thing that was killing Hurts for years, where he hadn't thrown a 30-yard pass game. But did he win? That's what you want.
Yes.
That's the bottom line.
From my viewpoint, it's like, I dug how Jalen stepped up, when they were down 8, he punched it in. Mm-hmm. He said, a rushing record. He got the 2-point conversion. You know, I love the fact. I love the fact he put the ball on the ground because that was the difference. You know,
yep.
You know, he, you know, on the ground. Mahomes, you know, of course, you know, I tell you that pharmaceutical construct at the halftime in the Kansas City locker room.
No,
can I get a shot of that? Can I get a shot of that shit? You know what I'm saying?
It was juju juice.
I mean, Mahomes was scrambling and shit. I mean, he ain't grimacing. He didn't. I mean, he was smiling like he was looking at his family and shit. So when he was running that route and shit,
that's
you know, I tell you though, man, I gotta be frank though. That last fucking 1 minute though was, oh my god, effery 101. And when what's that do, Olsen? You know, he did a decent job until the end.
Yeah.
You know, but that you know, when you start playing that time killer shit and not punching it in the end zone, that's the spread.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a difference 100%. Between winning by 7 and winning by 3. And that
100%.
Take a knee shit, woo, put the books ahead of Vegas. Vegas won the books, the house won on that kneel down. And also, you know, they won. I mean, the profit was the swing was 11 milli for the books, and it was 152 million bets. You know what I'm saying?
Eric, let me take a look side of that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm
if
all here.
If he hadn't gone down, right?
Right.
I can know a game earlier this year, the team didn't go down, and it set up a whole different aspect of the season.
Yeah, it was Atlanta and somebody, right? It was Atlanta. You know what I mean? I remember that game. But you know what, though? I mean, friggin' Kansas City's offensive line was the MVP of the game. They did
yes,
not touch Mahomes.
Yes, it was.
Joke.
Philly came in with 70 sacks. And they literally depleted the 49ers. They knocked both 49 quarterbacks out.
Yep. They did.
That's why they did not touch Patrick. It was annoying to me all week. These clowns on TV kept on talking about the quarterbacks. That said, it's going to be the guys in the trenches that make the game. Well, that was the difference.
They won it, man. But, I tell you, they did not touch Patrick. But Bienemy, though, I mean, I got to go back to Eric Bienemy because this is what my thought process was with this offensive, defensive guy. So if they're going to label him as an offensive coach and they say, well, we're going to make a decision because we want more of a defensive coach or some shit like that. Andy Reid had to flat give it up because those plays, Philly, and those plays that KC executed where they put the man in motion but then brought him back on each side for both touchdowns.
Yep. Here's the other thing. As much as Patrick knows that playbook, they did not run one screen pass. When Andy Reid coached the Eagles, they were the best screen team.
Every other play.
They run the screen 70% of the time.
Every other play.
So, Patrick.
Yeah, that was the enemy's hands down the stretch. And Reid had to fess that up. You know what I'm saying? Because those plays, man, when they set them in motion and reverse button, I mean, they had Philly looking like a pee-wee league team on how they defended it. I mean, these guys was 30 yards open, you know, and I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those were just a beautifully designed plays, and that was not AR. That was not Reid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're right about that.
Reid's never run nothing remotely similar to those plays.
Right.
It's not that creative. That's the enemy.
He got creative, but unfortunately, there's always a downside to this, and the downside had to be the mouse. As ESPN tried to get in and throw their two cents in, if it pleased the court, I got to run it down. Because Chris Berman was a bona fide 100% asshole. Now, I know last year, there was outside chance our word assholery would make the Urban Dictionary. But the truth is, this was assholery. The game was played on Lincoln's birthday. And Berman allegedly gave some noise about Abraham Lincoln's birthday being connected with the game. I mean, it's
Wow.
What are you going to say? He's emancipating the quarterbacks? Are you out of your damn mind? You know, we already know it's a 100-yard plantation, but, you know, I can't stand stupid. And he's gotten away with this shit too often. This was not shit. This is pure stupid.
I can see it.
If it please the motherfucking court, I'm so tired of ESPN and their fucking charges. They come on here, they resent black athletes, they resent black people, and they make it sound like nobody invented sports other than white folks. And Chris Berman embodies a lot of that shit. And that's why his ass is guilty of assholery in the first degree.
Serving his sentence, huh? Mike, I'm going to ask every question away from football because I'm getting some information. I want to seek some information about some basketball out west.
Yes, sir.
Eric, how has you see him more than anybody else does in the West Coast? How has Boney James developed?
Wow, that's a great question. Jeez, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I see Bronny a lot, you know. You know, there's things you have to kind of, you know, build in, you know, with Bronny, you know, to set the background. Now, he's probably played, you know, more basketball than, you know, the 90% of high school basketball players, right? That's first of all, right? Because he's constantly has access.
Right.
You know, he has in his household, he has access to the leading scorer of the NBA of all time, you know. And not only that, the training methods, the diet methods.
Yeah.
There's no lack. The best AAU teams, the best AAU coach. I'm aware of Sierra Canyon, you know, and what they do down there with their program. They haven't got to the point with, like, Boyle's Montverde Academy in Florida, which can't compete in prep basketball because, you know, they can't compete for state championships. That's why they play these, you know, these national tournament things, you know, that are highly sponsored because they're going to have, you know, NBA draft picks, you know, come to those programs. But when you take it back to Sierra Canyon, Bronny, you know, it's one of those things where there was talk that he was a McDonald's All-American, right? And the majority of thinking with basketball, so-called aficionados, for him to be a McDonald's All-American, it's because LeBron cuts a check. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he is a social media gargantuan. You know what I'm saying? Followers and stuff. His NIL is bonanza.
Simple,
right? I mean, yeah, it's even higher than that in some places. You know what I mean? And then he's got this genius basketball contract crew. He has 24/7 access to, right? So there's just a lot of tremendous things in his favor. On the court, you know, I think, you know, he's maximized his skills. You know, his younger brother's going to be the true beast because he's going to be a lot taller.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, he's on the come up. But Bronny, is, you know, length-wise, you know, he's not overwhelmingly athletic, right? You know, he's not going to kill you with athleticism. I mean, he's a polished player. He's not going to be, you know, this incredible shooter. You know, he's a smart player like his dad. He's a very competent, super competent high school player. I mean, can he be an NBA player along the line like Doc Rivers' kid? You hear what I'm saying with Austin? Right, Austin's not going to impress anybody. Can he? He's going to get in the league because of the connections are too powerful, and the drawing card is too powerful. In other words, LeBron and them have beautifully set it up. You know what I'm saying? I mean, in terms of the only thing that can inhibit that potential is injury. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to, you know, I mean, all-star caliber. I mean, there was a number of young people who should have been McDonald's All-Americans that got clipped because Brody got it. You know what I'm saying? Where they felt like they were much better players and then hiring on the token center. He's improved a lot. I mean, he is a all-state level to me, all-West Coast type player all day long. You know what I mean? But he's a best-in-the-nation type player. He's played on some really great teams who are surrounded with players who went through Sierra Canyon who are NBA players, like Kenyon Martin's son plays with Houston. Mm-hmm. There's another kid that plays with the Clippers. So he's grown up with a team that's moved on to the league or top picks, right? So, and they get coached well. But in terms of, you know, Bronny is not going to stun you. He's not going to make you go, wow. You will walk away. He's a very good player, but you won't go, wow.
I got some information lacking.
Yeah.
I got some information from somebody looking into that Nike Summit game that he's supposed to be part of, along with the kids from, you know, from South Jersey, Wagner and his
boys. I know Milt really well. Milt Billy, that's my era, right? So Wani, they're saying Wani's son,
and the 7-footer, anybody in Jersey,
he's balling,
in Jersey. But they got the Rookers ain't gonna give enough money, and it's just interesting. I was looking at it.
Yeah,
I've seen Rodney play before, and I like the way he can compliment a team. He doesn't overwhelm a team. I'll leave it at that.
No. He won't. He's talented. His younger brother's good. Like I said, he's the come up. You know, because he's got the freak features because he's going to be a tall player, right? You know, but remember, these guys can get groomed into the league. I mean, we see it with Austin Rivers, right? I never was impressed with Austin Rivers when they would say he was the number one player in the nation. But, you know, they know the roadmap to get to the league. They've been in these arenas since babies. The access that they have is a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And so that's a huge advantage. And when you look at all the advantages he has and what the results are with the balling, it doesn't match. You know what I'm saying? Because you've been there. Now, a good friend of mine is Phil Handy, right? And Phil Phil was a sack for a few years. And Phil, you know, was with Toronto when they won the championship. He was with Cleveland when they won the championship. And he's with the Lakers again. Right when they won it in the bubble, right? So he's been with all three teams, and he doesn't have no aspirations of being a home coach, but he does a lot of basketball training. So, you know, and if you dialogue with Phil, you know, I mean, really, you know, because he worked out Kobe, he worked out Kyrie, works with LeBron, right? And so just hearing, hearing some of the, you know, workouts, the mindsets, the basketball things, you know, those kinds of things that happen. And then, you know, of course, I've known Matt for a number of years. You know, he's doing this little thing on TV. You don't need to be spitting on people, though, and shit. That was a skull job. But the whole point of the matter, that was a skull job. Come on, man, that's bullshit. But that's another story. He knows better. But the whole point of the matter being is that when I get some, you know, insight on that, because Phil, you know, can work, you know, has worked them out. I mean, Phil's one of the best, you know, trainers out there with ball handling skills and shit. If you ever look at some of his YouTube videos, I mean, he's got hundreds of thousands of hits, but he's actually worked with all kinds of pro players on their handles, right, and how to break things down. So, I mean, you're getting this kind of coaching, man, in high school. And this is the trade-off. You know what I mean? The trade-off doesn't match, right, you know, the talent. It's kind of like if you look at Kareem, you know, right, for what LeBron had to do with his commitment to pass Kareem, this shows you what kind of beast Kareem was. Now, Kareem just gave, you know, he'll get pissed about, who cares. 15% more, he said that he'd have 50,000 points.
Well, that brings the question up that I've always had in my mind, but I figured it would just die because nobody would have the patience or the discipline to do it. Will anyone else ever learn the skyhook?
No, that's no.
Unfortunately, I had a hard time. But you know something, Mike? They should.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, though? That's a great question. I hope that helps, you know, Patrick, the Bronny thing.
Because I'm
in agreement. I'm in agreement with your view. Well, I'm in agreement with your view because, you know, I mean, you've had every advantage, man. Come on, every either brother here, whatever their skill set may be, position yourself with all those advantages. Be a little different turnout, right?
Yeah.
Right? Be a little different turnout, right?
I admit him.
No. I love the fact he has that access.
Yeah.
Literally. I love it and his humility and the fact he's groomed around all that environment, the way he handles himself and shit like that. I applaud him.
Yeah.
I applaud him. I hope he does, you know, go the distance. But then again, you know, from the basketball scouting mentality, I can't water down my view, you know what I mean, just because of those things. But I look at it from the standpoint, like, you look at Kobe, right? So Kobe, you know, Joe Bryant was his father, right? And so Kobe, again, you know, was over in Italy, you know, grooming his game and shit. He had all those things like that. But Kobe's work ethic was over the top. But Kobe had a skill set and talent. If you measure Bronny as a senior and Kobe as a senior, light years different.
I'm working with. There's two kids in Atlanta. I'm not gonna go into names or anything, but he said that's liable to blow up the whole country. I've heard that before. He says, listen to me, they're liable to blow the country up. I said, we'll see. I'm just trying to get my angle on things. That's all.
Yeah, it's like Shaq's children. Same
thing. Yeah. The Sunday page with the articles. I swear to God, when that happens.
Yes. Yeah, same thing. If you look at Shaq's kids, you know what I mean? Same thing. Carlos Boozer has top-rated kids in the nation, you know. You know, Melo's got a son out there. D-Wade.
Yeah, Melo's son is – I saw that.
I mean, D-Wade's son just wasn't good enough. He's in the G League. Bronny is better than him.
Yeah.
Bronny is a lot better than him, and he also went to Sierra Canyon.
Yeah.
Right, but Bronny's better than him. So Bronny's going to be a pro, but that's for sure.
We're in final thoughts. You're going to have to be pros and close it out. Patrick, set it off.
You know, speaking of that, I want to go into the fact that I said it before. I don't want to cuss really at some of these white boys getting these freaking jobs, and I know why they're getting them. You know, and the enemy is on the sideline again.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take. I think it's going to take some team. No, it boils down to this. I'll stop for you. He's in a position now to stay where he is at and be in a situation to where when as long as Mahomes can go around him, if you want me to leave Patrick Mahomes, here's my bargaining chip. I got a bargain. And unless he gets that, don't go anywhere because it's proven to me at this point that they're not going to give you the shot. You should dictate what you want to do, not them dictating what they're going to do. And I'll leave it at that.
That's a good point. We like that. Eric, throw something in the pot.
Patrick Ewing. Georgetown. I mean, you know. You know, it's like I'm rooting for you, bro. You know, I'm rooting for you. It's a very difficult thing to do if you can't get blue chippers, and if you can't get no NIL loot, you really have a roster, you know, that's probably a good D2 team when I watch a team play, you know.
I saw him play once in July.
I mean, you know, it comes at that level, you need better players, right? You know, and you just can't, you're not attracting better players, and, you know, you're on this long losing streak, but, you know, I mean, if there's a school that's sticking with you because of the fact you put them on the map and have given them incredible, incredible resources, it was all Patrick.
No
right?
shit.
He was that Hoya destroyer. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When he came through. I mean, you know, the whole Georgetown, you know, styling is built off Ewing. You know, John Thompson was obviously, you know, the late, great John Thompson was obviously a pillar. Sleepy Floyd still claims it was him that set shit off, but that's another story for Sleepy. But Patrick is the one that just blew it out of proportion. And, you know, and they're not winning. You know, they're on long losing streaks. But he has a lot of pride. He comes out there. He's not going to quit, you know. So we'll see what that circumstance out. All I want to say about Patrick is I'm rooting for you.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. We are rooting for Patrick. We like that. Bring back the Hoya Destroyers and bring back Georgetown-style ball when they were the Black University college basketball team. Yes.
And particularly with all that talent in D.C. area. Come on now.
Yeah. And Coach John, real quick, you know, he always has given, you know, the love to Coach McLendon. You know, even the way he used to sit in the middle of the bench, right? Because he'd have both players split, and he sat in the middle. That was a Coach McLendon technique, and that whole pressure style. Yeah, he talks about that. So he was one of the few coaches that would split the bench, right? Six players to the left, five players to the right, or whatever the team was, right? However they were set up player-wise, and he sat in the middle. That's a Coach McLendon. That's what Coach McLendon styling, and that's where he said he got it from. And that whole attack. Yeah, that whole pressure attack was Coach McLendon. Fast forward to 2022, Patrick Ewing did me a solid when I was a high school coach here. You know, when I went to a Knick game because a good friend of mine played with the Knicks, Tony Campbell, at the time. Broke me off some tickets, went back there.
My boy, T.O.
Yeah, Top Cat. What up, Top Cat? You know what I'm saying? We got some stories from my main man, Top Cat. That's my mellow man, as they say back in the day.
Oh,
but
man.
Patrick
Tony
made
Campbell.
Some. Top Cat. You talking about Top Cat. So, T.C. So, the cats here, right, Patrick made some young people stays, man. He dapped him up. He was at the height. Raleigh was coaching him. He was in the middle of that Nick thing. And he changed life when he met these people. So I'm rooting for the brother, man. Go get him.
All right. Fred, come on with it, Professor.
Speaking of Coach McLendon.
Yes, sir.
I'll be leaving next Monday noon, headed for Baltimore. And this will be my first CIAA since 2020. Ooh. And correction, my first on site. I have done the virtual thing for the last about 3 years, and then 1 year they didn't do it at all.
Okay.
Anyway, you know, I spoke to a group today, and one of the things that came out was that I will be going back into history. And looking at a lot of things, he's bringing back a lot of memories, you know, because I've already gone down the list of several people that were there with us 4 years ago, and now they're gone. And most recently was Eric Moore. And you know, just looking at the history that I have been blessed to be a part of and connection with all these people, I sound a little different when I say his name than Eric, but the impetus is still there. When I hear Coach McLendon, Coach Mack, you know, Little Big Man and all those kind of other things, and I say, you know, it was almost ruined because an interloper came in the realm of football. Couple of years ago, I never saw him as a savior to HBCUs because, to be honest, I didn't trust him when he came in, and when he left the same way I expected him to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the real thing, and the main thing that tipped me off was he didn't keep his facts straight. You know, I've mentioned this before. He said, I have the best recruiting class in the history of Jackson State football. And my question was, so he got, who are his four Hall of Famers? Well, he don't need that. Yes, he does.
Yes, he does.
And all those other things, HBCUs don't need a savior. They need people to do things. They need to change the mindset of the leadership of the various institutions. From,
you're right about that.
From we're not about academic, athletics, we were about academics. Well, if you whichever one you're doing, you just got to do it at a high level and do it do the best that is possible. We got to, you know, if it calls for coaches and players being more popular than chancellors and presidents, so be it. That's how it works.
Yep.
And there's a lot of other things out there, but you know, but not to rag Deion. He did uncover some sore spots, but it's up to us to heal those spots. He was never sent to do that. And you know, when it comes down to it, you know, the big thing now is this time next week, it will be night two of the we should have just completed day two of the CIAA tournament. This was something that was a gift to us from God through Coach McLennan, Coach Gaines, and all the other people from the CIAA. And the same goes for the other three major conferences among HBCUs. You know, we have proven we can do what we need to do. We just got to do it and do it the right way. If you haven't bought your sports encyclopedia, you can get that at www.blackheritageu.com. And then other books are available and other things are available. And we will be starting just after the CIAA tournament. We'll be actually going to work on putting together the HBCU Heritage Center, which will be the museum for HBCUs.
I want to piggyback on what Fred said, on that Fred said concerning the HBCU game they had earlier this month in Newark at the Invesco piece with the four HBCU schools. Rance is a guy in marketing of the piece. They're going to do it again next year. Also, was pushed very well by Michael B. Jordan. They wanted it to be the basketball theme like the football game every year. The numbers were good, and they'll be back next year. It worked out real well. It worked. The crowds were real good, really good.
Real quick, Mike, with everything the brothers have said, I want to, you know, I was remiss on this real fast. Congratulations, Ken Riley and family. You know, well-deserved recognition for all the phenomenal work you've done over the years. So, way to go, Ken Riley.
Long overdue, and no thanks to the Cincinnati Press, because you motherfuckers had no clue what you had. You never spoke up for them. It took him a long time to get in where he should have been. Gary?
Two babies, they're here to share it.
Yes, sir.
Gary, come on.
Yes, sir. Not me, if you heard it before. We are not characters. We are not stereotypes. We are people. Now, we're all happy that two black quarterbacks made the Super Bowl. But I am with this man of black horse. And the black horse of the Arizona rally against Native Americans has said that this is people who are not being mocked. Well, this Sunday, or this past Sunday, the protesters went to the Super Bowl. Protested the KCG's name. And here we go again. Bystanders mock the protesters with tomahawk chops and dance in the street. This has got to stop. Look, the chiefs did a half step by banning headdresses and war paint. But they haven't stopped the name and the dog job. I'm done. And not one single news agency did anything on it at all. Nothing. Anywhere. Here we go. 1 o'clock.
I hear you, brother. I think gonna come to grips with the fact that Black History Month and the Super Bowl have run into each other for over 50-odd years. And it's just recently that the politics is just getting capped. We should be hearing more of this, and we will hear more of this in the years to come. Having said that, I go back to where I started. You know, Doug was angry, and he went and took it out on Washington. I want to see every Black athlete, male, female, take it out on their opposition and be the very best that they are in doing what they do. And let that acknowledge who they are. I'm tired of being called whatever, whether it's phony or fake or whatever. You know, these are actually said. Cam Newton before he even picked up a fucking football in the pros. But we've always had those kind of people say things to us. I'm tired of shit. I'm tired personally of this shit because they question Black athlete as a news source as well. Even though we hit the mouse and check over 13 times when we had our facts straight. But, you know, when it comes down to all this, this is the message I want to send to everybody.
Sorry about the inconvenience.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you,
thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Kiss my entire ass.
Believe that shit.